From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fifth day of June 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. And a bit later in the program, Aaron Hager, weed scientist at the U of I, will be here to talk about mare's tail, especially if you happen to be a no-tiller. Or if you use burn down, have you looked to see in your corn and specifically your soybean fields whether that weed is still standing? He'll have some ideas about what you might, and I say and stress, might be able to do in order to control it as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, in Chicago on a Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby July soft red winter wheat, 7.01 1/2, down 7.5 cents. September there, $7.09, down 8.75. In December, soft red in Chicago at 7.22 3/4, 9 cents lower on the afternoon. The hard red, which trades in Kansas City still, at least for a few more months, at 7.43 1/4, down 7.5, at least in the open outcry. Now, from the corn pit back in Chicago, July futures, $6.60 3/4 of a cent, 1/4 of a cent higher. September, however, was down 12 3/4 at 5.71, and December futures at 5.42 1/4, 10 3/4 lower. March corn at 5.52 3/4, down 10 3/4, and the May at 5.60, 10 3/4 lower. July of next year down a dime at $5.67. Soybeans nearby July, 5.32 on a settlement price, up 3 1/4. August 2 3/4 higher at 14.54 3/4, and September at 13.54, down 6 1/4. November beans were 16 lower at $13 even, and January futures at $13.05, down 15 3/4. March at 13.04 1/4, down 15 cents as well. From the live cattle pit, nearby contract finished at 119.27 1/2, that's 85 cents lower, and the September's in the feeders at 146.85, down 70 cents. July lean hogs for the day at $94.57 1/2, down 17 1/2 cents. You're, of course, listening to Illinois Public Media. This is the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The nearby contract for the crude oil trading July at $93.82 a barrel, up 51 cents. Ethanol at $2.65 8/10, down 2 2/10. And the wholesale price of gasoline at $2.82 5/10, that's 7 1/10 of a cent higher. Natural gas for the day at $4.03 a cent is higher for the day. And the gold futures at $1,398.40 an ounce are up $1.30 on the afternoon. The U.S. dollar trading 82.59 is down 0.16 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from the National Weather Service for this afternoon. Partly sunny skies, a high of 80 degrees on a southeast wind at 8 mile an hour. And then tonight, a slight chance of showers. That'll be between 8 and 2. And a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 a.m. as well. Mostly cloudy, a low of 62. Southeast winds at around 6 miles an hour, becoming calm in the evening. Chance of precipitation this evening set at 40% for the night. And then tomorrow, 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms will continue. Mostly cloudy, a high of 78. Tomorrow evening, showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy and a low of 58. Still at the 40% chance, and 30% on Friday for showers. That before 8 in the morning. Thereafter, partly sunny and a high of 73 on a north wind at 8 miles an hour. Friday night, partly cloudy and a low of 55. Saturday, sunny skies and 74. Saturday night, partly cloudy and a low of 59. We'll take a more detailed look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. He is in Kansas City. Remember, you can always visit us online and listen to what Drew has to say again if you'd like. That'll be up at willag.org. That's willag.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. This is WILLAG.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Well, on this fifth day of June, let's check out what's been happening in the futures markets on the phone line from here in Champaign County. And Jack is Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
It's been an interesting spring. A lot of rainfall. We have had some flooding. We have had some prevent plant that might be in play. We're not quite certain how many acres of corn will be planted. What do you hear, and what's the trade thinking?
Well, I think the trade is totally uncertain of what's going to happen, primarily because they know that when you looked at 2009, we had plenty of guys that planted right into the 25 days and even all the way out to the end of the 25-day crop insurance period. The one thing we feel pretty certain about is that when you look into the northern tier, you know, on the report yesterday, on Monday, they showed that there are about 4 million acres left to be planted between Illinois, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Well, you know, when you look at Minnesota and Wisconsin, that's a whole different situation. They have been hammered by rain much, much more so than we have in the last week and a half, and I can attest to that because I was there. And it's not a matter of it stops raining today and we get in the field tomorrow. Up there, it's probably more like 10 days. And so I think prevented plant is much more in play in the northern states. In fact, I heard about a meeting that was prevented plant meeting last week in southeastern central Minnesota, and they had 200 chairs set up and 600 people showed up. I've heard of a lot of seed being returned on June 1st, ready corn seed, and the problem that you have up there is just no short maturity corn available. Actually, that's a problem that's a lot of places. So for them, I'm sure it's a tough pencil. You know, you got to look at if you already have nitrogen on, you're going to lose that. P and K won't go away. That'll be there yet next year, but even the long-term impact that we see on prevented plant, I think a lot of people don't think about that. You know, what happens to the elevators that are planting on, let's say, a million bushels? Let's say we lose a million bushels. What happens to the elevators that are planting on that? What happens to the seed companies for next year? What happens to the fertilizer companies? So there's a lot of things that a person really has to take into account before you make that decision, and I'm sure plenty of people are struggling with it.
Yeah, there are many things that have to be taken into account, and even in the state of Illinois, the western part of the state of Illinois has quite a bit of ground left to plant that should have been put into corn, and I'm hearing that even some of that may go to prevent plant.
Well, that's what we're hearing. You know, the thing is with prevent plant, they've really got to look at where the return is, and when you look at beans, and we're starting to get into a time frame here that's not extremely friendly to a really big bean crop either, you've got to pencil it out and say, where am I going to get the best return? And sometimes prevented plant is the way to go. You know, I looked at the growing degree days, too. You know, we all know that we've had a cooler spring than normal. But even here in Illinois, when you look at between April and May, we were 171 days behind on growing degree days. And, you know, you just don't make those up overnight. These are degrees now that have to be made up as we get further out into the September. In other words, pushing fall further away. In fact, I looked at seven different states. The two that are the furthest behind are Kansas and Nebraska. Kansas is 269 degree days behind. Nebraska is 200 days behind. But Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, of those seven states, we're 175 degree days on average behind. That takes 12 days in September with a high of 80 and a low of 50 to be able to just catch up. And so, and you're never going to, you know, you always have degree days building on those days too, so it even pushes us out farther than that. But the thing I think that some people are not really comprehending when you talk about loss of acres, whether it be prevent or just switching, you know, we're hearing a lot of 1 million, 3 million, 6 million.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at, if you take 158 bushels, 154 and 150, if we lose a million acres, we can go down to 150, we'll still be above a billion bushels for carryout. We're using the numbers that the USDA is currently using, and the part that is a little scary is they increased feed usage by 925 million, ethanol by 250, and exports by 550. That means they put 1.725 billion bushels of added usage in there. So if we lose 3 million acres, we don't get below a billion until we get down to 150. If we lose 6 million acres, we don't get below a billion until we get to 154. And so, you know, this is, and if you're taking acres out that are either going to be poor production, no production at all, you're always going to have a higher yield. And so I just think guys have to be very much aware of that, that the even though we're looking at a loss of acres, it still doesn't project a really low carryout or necessarily a lot higher price.
Yeah, so this is something that you have to remind them of, I suppose, when you're on the phone with them fairly often. What do you tell them about this process then?
Well, I believe that you have to prepare yourself for whatever the market's going to throw at you. And the reality is we still have a lot of acres that are planted. Granted, we don't know what our yield is going to be, but if you're a risk manager, you have to make sure you have yourself positioned, and then you can do that using puts, anything to give yourself some upside potential. You can use doing it using futures if you're satisfied with where the price is. If you're an end user, I think you have to come in here and you've got to be buying some calls. I had a number of people from Wisconsin today who are dairy farmers that have been buying calls because they only have one-third of their crop in. And they need to buy. They're going to need to buy corn somewhere down the road. And so it doesn't look like we maybe will have necessarily a shortage of corn, but we could have a higher price on corn if we end up. Well, let's talk about the weather.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're talking about a possible ridge coming in, and could come in as early as the end of next week. Now, you know, that would be like our worst nightmare, because we do not need a lazy crop like what we have planted right now to suddenly come under stress from a lack of rain and a really, really shallow root system. And so I don't think as a risk manager, whether you're an end user or a producer, that you can take a chance. I think you have to manage your risk. And I know it's tough because, especially the producer, you know, where have they been the most successful? They've been the most successful selling corn across the scale for the last number of years. And so, you know, it's easy to lull yourself into believing that we're just going to have these extremely high prices. I prefer to have my bottom covered and then let the market show me it's going to really give me those prices.
Take me through the soybean fundamentals fairly quickly.
Oh, well, Landworth did come in and drop bean acres a million acres today. That was kind of a shock.
Mm-hmm.
When I look at China inked a deal with Purdue today to buy 790 million metric tons of beans. That's huge. And from a meal standpoint, we saw today that Argentina basically lowered their protein on their meal, which is really not a great thing, and it's mostly because their beans are coming out with very low protein levels. So all of that implies that we could have really good demand for U.S. beans, even if they have a big crop down there.
All right. Thank you so much. Anything on the livestock before I let you go?
Well, I'd have to say that hogs are euphoric still over the Smithfield sale, the Schwangway, and when it comes to cattle, of course, we got plenty of demand concerns. And, you know, it's funny. We've been down ever since they've been talking about putting that livestock amendment, banning the formula pricing into the farm bill. So I just can't quite figure out where we're headed. Choice Select 21.2, lots and lots of really finished animals standing out in the feedlots right now.
All right.
So good meat for us, but really tough for everybody else.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Joins us on the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Have you looked in your soybean field, maybe even your corn field, especially if you're a no-tiller, for the weeds that survived the burn down? It's pretty probable that there's some mare's tail there that may very well be herbicide resistant. I talked with Aaron Hager this morning and asked him about that problem.
One of the most common questions that we've had in the last 10 days is about the lack of control or the poor control of horseweed or mare's tail, especially with burn down herbicides that were applied for no-till soybean prior to no-till soybean planting. And in many cases, the burn down would have consisted of something either, say, glyphosate by itself or glyphosate combined with 2,4-D and perhaps even a residual herbicide. Many of the field complaints that we've actually looked at, the mare's tail has shown some evidence of twisting up from the 2,4-D, but many of the plants are going to eventually survive the burndown application. So a lot of questions have been asked about what we can do now that the soybean are planted, but the mare's tail are still alive.
And so they're, well, not proven to be resistant, but they didn't work with the herbicide. What can a producer do?
In corn, most of our acres are tilled prior to planting, so rarely do we see this as a significant problem in corn. However, of course, if no-till corn is an option or it was planted, some of these mare's tail obviously could have survived the burndown application there as well. So in corn, farmers have a lot of choices. Growth regulators, for example, 2,4-D or dicamba-containing products. Certain ALS-inhibiting herbicides actually perform fairly well on mare's tail, and if these product labels allow, the performance could even be enhanced if these are actually tank-mixed with some of the growth regulators. Glufosinate or Liberty in a Liberty-linked corn is a very good option. Usually we'll see better performance if that's tank-mixed with atrazine. And then some of the foliar-applied HPPD inhibitors, things like Callisto and Laudis, for example, again combined with atrazine, can be pretty effective on mare's tail. That's about 6 to 8 inches tall. Our more significant challenges lie in soybean. And mare's tail that survive the burndown application are typically going to be fairly large at this time when farmers can make an application to soybeans. And there's really a lot fewer options, herbicide options, for control of the emerged mare's tail in soybean.
Does that mean it's time to get the hook and hoe out?
Well, let's do the herbicide options first.
Okay.
They're really the only viable options that farmers have for controlling the emerged mare's tail in soybean would be products that contain the active ingredients of chloramsulam, which is marketed as First Rate, or chloramuron, which is marketed as Classic. And these products, typically the labels would allow applications after soybean, the first trifoliate leaf has expanded, and typically the label would list mare's tail up to about 6 inches in height as being controlled by these particular products. They're usually always going to be combined with glyphosate and glyphosate-resistant soybeans. Again, very tentative or very unlikely that these kinds of products would control some of the larger mare's tail plants that might have survived the burndown application. The foliar applied PPO inhibiting herbicides in soybean are not viable options to control mare's tail. So if all else fails, it may seem to many to be something that's less than desirable to do, but physically removing the remaining mare's tail would be advisable. And especially if you had populations that are not completely overrunning the field, for example, if there are a few scattered plants here and there throughout the field, physically removing them by using a hoe or a weed hook or pulling them from the soil. Mare's tail can be a competitive weed species with soybean. Depending on density and duration of interference, yield losses can mount up fairly substantially. And mare's tail, on average, could produce around 200,000 seeds. And these seeds are very mobile. They are adapted to wind dissemination. So a few scattered plants remaining in a field maybe doesn't look like they would cause much damage in terms of yield loss, could really reseed the entire field within a very short number of seasons, perhaps even only one or two seasons.
And it's been a very long time since I walked a soybean field, probably 30 years at this point. But it seems to me that I recall there were a few weeds that if you cut them off, that would just simply come back. Do we have to worry about mare's tail in this form?
There could be some regeneration, but typically if we cut the stems around the soil surface, even if the plant would be able to regrow from that, we've really set it back. And by the time that we would physically remove those plants like that, the soybean would be up, obviously, and would become more and more competitive with any, you know, regrowth on those plants. Eventually, ideally, what we'd like to have is that canopy form over those cut stumps. So even at that time, if those plants were able to regenerate themselves, either the amount of yield loss through interference that the soybean would experience or the amount of seed that those plants could produce both of those would be dramatically less.
Aaron Hager, of course, is a weed scientist at the University of Illinois. You can read more from him about mare's tail and the resistance that is developing, how to handle it, on the IPM Bulletin website. The address there is bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Well, let's check now the cash grain market on this fifth day of June. Stephen Lenneber is with us from the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Stephen. Thank you for being with us today.
No problem.
Hey, the first time I think we've ever talked to you, give me a little bit about your background, please.
Come from a pork procurement background, actually, from Indiana Packers and Delphi, and raise hogs on the home front. So from a biosecurity standpoint and production at home, looked more towards the ag commodity side of merchandising to pursue the career in, and that's what brings me here to the Andersons.
All right. Tell me about the fundamentals in the area. How tight are supplies, and at least in the old crop for corn?
Well, I certainly think right now, especially with the market and continuing to hold a rally on the July corn side, certainly trying to intrigue some farmer selling on that side of things, and I definitely believe there is corn supply still to be had out there, but at the same time trying to find that optimal level where it presents farmers, you know, the optimal selling cash price to bring that corn in here. Certainly from a June delivery standpoint, places are bringing in ideas that relatively comfortable in inventories, but as we approach the month of July, still a lot of corn to be purchased, and we do certainly believe there's some out there. We just got to attempt to find it.
Your region has been very short of supply all year long. How far are you having to reach now to bring corn to the plant?
Pretty decent, into the central Illinois region, this direction, as far as we get into the, upper parts of Michigan and coming down south and working well into the Ohio area, to meet supply and demand here for the climbers location.
That tells me your bid should be pretty good. What are they for the day?
Right now, 55 over the July puts us at a 715 and a half cash bid to climbers, and that's for both June and July delivery.
And if you look out into the new crop, what kind of bids do you have there?
We are right now 15 under for Ocknove delivery versus the Deese, putting us at a cash price of 538.
Thank you so much, Stephen.
No problem.
Stephen Lenneber is with the Anderson's Climbers facility. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market in a couple of minutes. I'll be back. We'll talk all about the agricultural weather forecast. That, of course, with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Lerner Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Lerner Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Lerner Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
It's Feast Day of St. Boniface, patron saint of brewers. On this day in agricultural history in 1856, the first vegetarian community was established in Kansas by Henry Club, the leading advocate of vegetarianism in the U.S. Club wrote that his colony would preserve the principles of vegetarianism and would induce thousands of wavering citizens to, quote, adopt a system of diet so highly conducive to their happiness and well-being. The dream colony was named Octagon City. In 1876, foil-wrapped bananas were sold for a dime at the Centennial Exposition in Philadelphia. Bananas became a popular treat for the first time in the U.S. when word spread about how delicious they were. In 1877, the U.S. Congress taxed oleomargarine to protect the dairy industry. The Margarine Act of 1886 was in response to a judicial ruling saying oleomargarine could not be banned from import or production. And in 1883, James and William Horlick developed the process to dehydrate milk, and they received a patent for it. They called the new powder malted milk. The original idea was to produce a milk product for babies and invalids that could be shipped without spoiling. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated is here to take a look at the weather forecast. Will it offer producers an opportunity to continue planting soybeans, Drew?
I think it will, with a lot of caution. You got to be careful not to make too many sweeping generalizations, because somebody out there is going to get a heavier amount of rainfall. That's the nature of this pattern we're going into. It will not be uniform across the region. We will see some areas that get just some spotty light shower activity periodically over the next 4 or 5 days, and there'll be some other areas that will end up with a cluster of mean thunderstorms that will produce some pretty hefty amounts of rainfall. And the problem with all that is that knowing exactly where those stronger storms is going to occur is really difficult, because these computer forecast models really have a hard time trying to pinpoint that. Right now, it looks like tonight we'll have a cluster of thunderstorms that will come out across central Missouri and move to southern Illinois, and then eventually into southern Indiana, northern Kentucky, and we may see some hefty amounts of rainfall in that little corridor. It'll be a small cluster, though. It'll only impact maybe, maybe a 100-mile-wide band that would be involved with that, and the heaviest rains would be even more localized than that. As we move on out, there'll be some other showers, I should say, that occur tonight and tomorrow, but they will be very random and mostly quite light. As we go on out into the Thursday afternoon and Friday time period, we'll actually do fairly well. I think probably a big portion of the listening area and the Midwest in general will likely only see a few spotty light showers during that period of time, and it'll be our best day of general drying. Now, there will be instability showers around and a little cloudiness, and it's still going to be a little bit of a cooler day, but we're still going to have opportunity to dry up a little bit and get a little bit more field work done. As we move on into the weekend, we'll get a little bit more significant frontal boundary coming across the region, and thunderstorms will once again have a chance to develop a little bit more significantly, but in clusters. And portions of Illinois will be involved with that on Saturday and Sunday, and we'll likely see maybe two-thirds of the state being impacted over the two-day period. But that means that the other third will probably get by looking pretty good during that period of time. As we get into the early part of next week, the model data here at midday today suggested there would be a strong cluster of thunderstorms in northern Illinois that would work from there into western and southwestern parts of Ohio. I don't buy into it. I think it's overdone. But if it were to happen the way the model says, there'd be like 1 to 3 inches of rain in that little corridor. The rest of the area would not get anywhere near that much precipitation. So the bottom line, to answer your question, is that we will be in the fields working, but you're going to have to pay attention to the radar every day and probably every hour of the day just to make sure you don't get caught.
Are there other areas around the planet that you have concerns about at this time for the Northern Hemisphere growing season?
Well, I think for the most part, Northern Hemisphere areas are doing relatively well. We've got some issues going on in Canada. Left over from that late snow melt that took place, the planting up there is behind as well. But they've had some really good weather here recently in some parts of the prairies up there, and they're making some progress. We're watching that. We're also watching some leftover drought in Russia, in the south-central part of Russia. It's a relatively small area right now that still suffers from that, but there is that underway. But really a big part of Russia and Ukraine are doing very well this year, and so that drought that does linger isn't a big deal. China looks good, and India's monsoon is often running like it's in a big hurry this year to make a lot of tracks, and so far the rains have been pretty good, and we're only in the fourth or fifth day of the season.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.